Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide SA speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
Thank you. And I'll ask the timekeeper to please give me a shout with 5 minutes left. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, yes, good morning, all. Well, it's good morning here. And, yeah, I'm Brendan. I'm a sexaholic. That hasn't changed. But what has changed is that I've been given recovery from the act of acting out, from the chaos that it brings with it, and thanks to the ninth step, from a lot of the shame and guilt and, you know, self-loathing and just general kind of beating up on myself, which in itself is another obsession with self and can actually keep me further from recovery than definitely I would like. You know, this constant beating in the chest. Oh, I'm such a terrible person. All what I did is sort of these things, whatever. And I can never really be accepted. Nobody can ever forgive me. And, you know, that's just another way of focusing on myself and another way of reducing my usefulness to others. And if we read about the step nine in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says to us on page 77 that our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. You know, so what we're doing here is, you know, it's not a mea culpa, I'm sort of, you know, so terrible, this or the other. It's I'm trying to get to a stage where I can actually be useful and where I can actually live life in a full way. It says to us in step three that, you know, when we take on board that we have a higher power guiding our life, and when we sincerely live by that, we're going to see this change in our life. We're going to see that new power is going to come in, because we don't have the power to stay sober ourselves. This new power is going to come in. It's going to come in from a higher power. And we're going to start to see that we can live life successfully and that we are, in fact, reborn. Now, if I was reborn as the same person, I would come back with all the same problems and all the difficulties and whatever. I'm reborn. I have a new. It's a new Brendan. And this new Brendan, I don't want to live the life that I lived before. I have a new life. I have a new way of living, new way of thinking. Doing the steps, the whole purpose of the steps is to change the way I think about life. And my way of living caused difficulties for me and for a lot of other people. And, you know, I stepped on a lot of toes, and I didn't always think that it was, you know, that I was doing any wrong. I was just being. And I've been looking at that recently, and there's a balance between I'm this terrible person who hurt a whole lot of other people, and I'm this person who has hurt other people, but I'm not necessarily a terrible person. But to get from A to B, to get from that sort of, first of all, not being able to look at the harm I've done, and then not being able to take my gaze away from the harm I've done, you know, to get to humility, you know, what Bill W. talks about, emotional sobriety. And emotional sobriety must mean that I have a true vision of the world and a true vision of myself. You know, I'm not an evil person. I have done things that I am still, they can they can give me a twist when I think about them and I go, oh, why did I do that? Why the hell did I do that? You know, why was I dishonest in that situation? You know, why was I unfaithful in another situation? Why wasn't I more mature? And actually, Bill W. says that emotional sobriety, he describes it as greater maturity and balance, which is, he says, humility. And humility involves a proper view of who I am and not to be afraid to be who I am. Humility does not mean that I am to let people walk over me or that I'm constantly sort of saying, oh, you know, I'm lower than others. And so, humility is about finding balance. It's about finding, you know, my right size. And that's ego deflating in a good way. I remember years ago, I had a co-sponsor in Japan. His name was Fuji. Fuji says to me, he says, Brendan, your problem, I'm not going to do a Japanese accent, by the way, okay? So Fuji anyway says to me, he says, Brendan, your problem's not that you've got a big ego. Your problem is that you've got a tiny little ego and you've had to build this massive ego to protect the tiny ego. He says, what you've got to do is you've got to burst that tiny ego and the large inflated one that you've created will burst of its own accord and you've got to come to your right size. And that's always helped me, you know, to look at this. And step 9 is part of that process of getting to the balance. There are harms that I've done and harms that I need to make amends for. And amends is not saying sorry. You know, I don't know about everybody else, but the Irish race say sorry. There's only one word that they use more and it begins with an F. But the sorry one is like sort of, here we go, like I'm down the street, I bump into something, sorry. You know, you open the door and you kind of nearly button it, sorry. And sorry this, and sorry that, and sorry whatever. It's, you know, it really doesn't mean anything. It means nothing and it means everything. Same as the F word. But it's like, I am now going to, in this case, it says I have to, you know, make amends to all the people I've harmed, unless to do so would harm them or others. And so I need to have a balanced way of doing this. And it tells me that what I'm going to have to do is when I go to make amends to people, I need to be, you know, I need to be careful. It says we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. You know? So in step 8, I've been preparing to go and make amends. And if I'm working with a sponsor who has done this work, and what I did was I would write out what I was going to say. I wasn't going to just leave it to chance. I'm going to write out what I'm going to say. And I had the habit of, you know, and I did this with sponsors as well, of saying, okay, well, let's take a list of the things. So in a particular case, you know, I was angry, aggressive, abusive, unfaithful, inconsiderate. Oh, and I put down a range of the adjectives to express, you know, the defects of my way. And then I would select 3 instances. If there was more than one, I tend to select 3 instances. There's no point selecting 20 or 30. You know, ones that I thought were the ones that might have harmed them. And I did this for my parents and I did it for others. And then at the end, I was going to write down and have written out, you know, what can I do to put things right between us? And I got into the habit of doing that and preparing myself so that when I went to people, I had a clear idea of what I was going to say, not just bumbling up and sort of saying, hey, sorry, you know, I know I was sort of, you know, may have done you some harm. And the other thing I'm not going to do when I come in to do 9-step with somebody is come in and say, well, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, that I was you know, that I was really aggressive and this, that, and the other. But on that day, I was having a bad day, and like sort of, I just lost money on the whatever, you know, on the street, and, you know, I'm here and I was doing that. And it was, so it really wasn't about you. It was like about me, and I was doing this, that, and the other, blah, 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 blah. You know, no excuses. I go from, I am sorry, I leave that out, and I go to somebody and say, I was wrong. You know, I was wrong to treat you this way. And that's much stronger than, you know, kind of, oh, I'm sorry. Is that I was wrong. And it's not I was wrong, but you were wrong as well. So no, I was wrong. The other person's behavior isn't brought into account at all. We're not going to go down that street. At some later date, I've gone back to people at a later date and said, you know, I have to say your behavior was incorrect towards me. But that's a separate thing. That is separate from me making amends. Preparing to make the amends. You know, in a lot of cases, how much detail do I really need to go into? And in some cases, remember, it says we're not going to make the amends if it would harm them or others. So, you know, I'm not going to go back and say to, you know, my best friend, listen, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, when I slept with your girlfriend, it wasn't anything personal to you, but it was like sort of, you know, I was just, you know, I want to make amends to it and whatever. Or to somebody, you know, where I've been, you know, with somebody's wife or, you know, there's cases when it's just totally inappropriate. It's not going to repair anything. And there's times when, you know, my parents don't need a litany of, you know, I'm sorry when I stole from you on the Thursday, the 21st, and then on the 22nd, and then the 23rd, and whatever, you know, and when I crashed the car, you know, on numerous occasions. Like, they know a lot of this stuff, you know, and I didn't, as I said, I would choose three things and I would acknowledge, you know, were the things that I thought might really have harmed people. And sometimes that was, you know, I didn't turn up on the event when I was supposed to. But I found in those living amends, the people that are close to me, those were amends, they went over time. And those were the amends which really needed a change in my behavior. You know, going and saying I was wrong. And I've done this, you know, I was wrong and this, that, and the other. And then, you know, a week later, I was wrong. And eventually, and that does work. You know, my father, it was interesting. My father in his 80s, you know, he came to make an amends to me. And I was saying, no, no, no. And he said, you can do it and I can do it. You know, because he'd seen me. I would say I'm wrong. And I would say I'm wrong pretty quickly. I'm not going to leave it for weeks or months or whatever. You know, when I've done my initial round of nine step, and, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, it comes with time. I met somebody, but just over 10 days ago that I hadn't seen in 40 years. And it was a woman I had gone out with, and she's married now. I was meeting with her and her husband, and I talked to a member in advance. Say, look, you know, I'm here and it's kind of, you know, I'm feeling there's some amends here. And he sort of said, just, you know, if you get the opportunity, just say, I know my behavior may have hurt you. And that was wrong. And when I did, she, you know, her response to me was like, we weren't engaged, you know, you were just, you know, and we had a good conversation. And that, you know, it changed my thinking in terms of, because my mind can go, oh, they think badly of me.
Brendan, mean it.
Thank you. And that, you know, they're thinking badly of me is just another way of me to focus on myself. But I can let those go. With my parents, you know, that was a really important thing. I came back to live close to my parents. I'd been living abroad for many, many years. And I came back, God brought me back about 5 years before they passed away. And, you know, I had done some intensive eight-step work with a sponsor in another program before this. And I realized that, you know, my mother all she wanted was peace in the house, you know. And I had spent my life convincing her that I was right. And really what I had to do was just shut up. Just stop insisting that she understand me, that she accept that I really and truly it was my brother that was wrong and I was right. Or was this a... Is that a translation of what I'm saying?
Sorry about that.
It's okay. Not a bother. It may well have been. I can't say that. Anyway, you know, I just needed to turn up in the house with a smile on my face, give her a hug, and just that sort of just chill out, yeah? And, you know, there's certain things that would you know, upset my mother, you know, even offering to help her in certain things. And when I would hear that in her tone, and I would sort of feel myself being ready to react to it, I learned to get up and go out and go for a walk. And I could say to her, I'm going for a walk, and she'd smile at me and she'd go, and I'd just go for a walk. The important one with my father, and I may have mentioned this before over there, but I think it's worth saying again, is with my father, after a lot of inventory work and a lot of years of doing this, I eventually realized that my amends to my father needed to be to stop needing him to show he loved me, to be able to accept that his actions over the years, if not his manner, had shown his love. My father was a stern person in times. He had a great sense of humor, but he could just be stern and distant. But it didn't mean he wasn't loving. And I had to cut through this need for him to show his love in a way that I could accept. With the mother of my son, that was probably, you know, one of the most intense. And that one, you know, I wrote out various different letters in advance and took one of them I took the final version to a woman with over 20 years of sobriety. And had her read through it before I took it. And she advised me, she said, when you give this to her, do not at that stage, you know, wait for forgiveness. Actually ask her not to respond, but to take the letter and to take time and respond in her own time. And she did that. She actually went away for 2 weeks and came back with stuff written down herself. And it was the same things that I had identified as being painful that she came back with. And she couldn't understand. She couldn't understand why I had done these things. And she was looking for an answer. And I had to sort of say, you know, I was sick. I was a sick person. And to this day, I think that she still can't understand why I could have done those things. And but the amends was made, and that was really important. The amends was made, and I had tried making amends on at least 3 occasions before that, but it wasn't until I was really, really clear and had really seen and was prepared in this way that I was able to make the amends at depth. And that amends, of course, that amends doesn't correct what I did. It doesn't change what happened. Yeah, but what it does do is it sets me free of that. I can't live my life and every day of my life in guilt for what I've done. If I'm guilty, I go and I make amends. And the other thing that I have to say is I can't live my life in shame all the time, because shame is not going to enable me or assist me to do my higher powers well. So I have to become free of guilt and free of shame. I become free of the guilt by making amends and free of the shame by realizing that it stops me from being able to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and others. And I leave it there. Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.